Hey everyone, welcome to Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering one podcast at a time. I'm Peter Reitzis, your host, starting off the show as always with some good voluntary stuttering. I'd like to welcome to the show Rabbi Mark Glickman. Hi, Rabbi Glickman.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm very well. And yourself?
Doing great.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. You're on a phone at a hotel in Palm Springs at a Jewish Reform conference. Is that right?
It's a rabbinic conference, the closing hours of a rabbinic conference. All the rabbis from up and down the West Coast get together every year in Palm Springs. It's rough work, but we've got to do it.
Well, many stutterers know what you're talking about, including yourself, because you are a rabbi who stutters. But many people listening really look forward to these stuttering conferences like the National Stuttering Association conference every summer. So
right.
We have an idea of what's going on. So our big topic today is Judaism and stuttering. Rabbi Mark S. Glickman has served as a rabbi of two congregations, Kol Shalom on Bainbridge Island in Washington since 2004 and Kol Ami in Woodinville, Washington State. Rabbi Glickman is author of Sacred Treasure, The Cairo Geniza, The Amazing Discoveries of Forgotten Jewish History in an Egyptian Synagogue Attic, published by Jewish Lights. And you have coming out soon a second book, Burnt Pearls, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Nazi Jewish Library, being published by the Jewish Publication Society. We are both stutterers. We have a lot of stuttering stuff to talk about. Let me just ask you right off the bat. As a rabbi, you have congregations, I'm sure you do counseling one-on-one and with families. What's it like being a rabbi who stutters?
Well, in terms of the relationship with my congregations, I think that the stuttering is often an issue for my congregations. It is noticeable for my congregations at the beginning of our relationship. When we first get to know each other, they notice it a lot. And then over time, they get to know me, and they don't notice it so much. As a matter of fact, when I was a student rabbi, I remember I had this experience. They assign us to these student pulpits, these small congregations, often in small towns that can't afford a full-time rabbi. And so one year, every other weekend, I would fly from Cincinnati, where I went to school, to Billings, Montana, where I was the student rabbi at the congregation there. And the person who was in charge of supervising the student rabbi program, coincidentally, a couple of years earlier, had been the full-time rabbi at this congregation. And now he was the dean at my school. And I remember shortly after I started serving the congregation, I got a note from the dean saying, from a secretary saying, the dean would like to see you. And I made an appointment, and I went up, and I saw the dean. I was very nervous. We sat down. He said, "You stutter." And I said, "Yes, I know." He said, "Well, what are we going to do about that?" I said, "I don't know. What should we do about it?" And he was teaching us this class where he would bring in guest speakers a lot. He said, "Do you think we should warn the speakers ahead of time?" I said, "You know what? We can just let them live on the edge a little bit." And he was trying to be very nice about it, and he offered to help me get some speech therapy. And I've maintained contact with him over the years. That was 25, 30 years ago. And I was recently at a convention, and I saw him, and I was razzing him about this. He said, well, now I can tell you what was going on. He said, right after you started serving the congregation, they called me up, and they said, this Glickman guy, he's great, but the stuttering is really an issue. Do something. Help him. And he said, we helped you get some therapy, but at the end of the year, he said, you were still stuttering as much as you had been. But the congregation called me back, and they said, I don't know what you did, but whatever it was great, because the stuttering, we don't even hear him doing it anymore. So, you know, I was still stuttering just as much, but they had gotten to know me, and I think that tends to happen in most of the congregations.
Oh, wow. Yeah. In my experience, I've definitely experienced that when people get to know you, the stuttering isn't such a big deal. Now let's just get this out of the way. You joke to me in an email that you might not stutter when you come on Stutter Talk. And other guests, in fact, many other guests have said the same thing. Why do you think that is?
You know, I don't know. As you and I'm sure all your listeners know, this stuttering thing, if only it were logical, it would be so much easier to deal with. I think perhaps it might be that I'm in, you know, when I'm talking about my stuttering, certainly in a situation where I know I'm talking to an audience of stutterers, I know that it's an accepting audience. They're not going to think anything less of me, and therefore I'm not as nervous about it. I think that might be part of the answer. I wish I knew more. And in general, of course, I wish my stuttering would follow a more logical course in my life in general. That would make it far more easy to cope with. But I think it might have to do with the fact that that I know that I'm speaking to an accepting audience.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. So you were interviewed for a really excellent short article titled Stuttering Clergy Spread the Word. I've seen the article run in numerous publications, including the Huffington Post. And in it, you share that your father questioned whether or not you could be a stutterer and be a rabbi and go to rabbinical school. What was it like for you to go to yeshiva and rabbinical school and become a rabbi with a stutter?
Well, it was, you know, I had questions about it at first, and it turns out, and I was kind of surprised to learn this, there are a lot of rabbis who are stutterers or closet stutterers or former stutterers. It is not uncommon in the rabbinate for there to be stutterers. I think there is proportionately a larger number of stutterers in the rabbinate than there are in the general population. And so I called one of them up before or as I was applying. A wonderful, dear Rabbi Richard Levy is his name, and he said to me that, you know, his stuttering really enhanced his rabbinate and made him more sensitive to people's challenges and frustrations. It helped him be a good role model, and that really inspired me to apply for rabbinical school. And as I was in rabbinical school, in some ways, there were certain moments where I could kind of wear it as a badge of pride in a sense. People would come up to me and say how impressed they were with me that I was able to do this. They said how impressed they were with the courage that I had. I didn't think it was courage so much as just this is who I am and I wanted to be a rabbi. But it was ironically was able, I think, in the eyes of my colleagues, to put a couple feathers in my yarmulke.
For the listeners who don't know, a yarmulke is I'm going to use the word hat that Jewish people wear. Do you want to describe it better than that?
It's a skull cap.
Skull cap.
Perhaps you could call it a beanie, just a small hat that's worn by many traditional Jews as a sign of respect. Yes. But it was always a challenge, and it takes energy. It takes the stuttering, the combination of stuttering and being a rabbi takes an expenditure of energy that I think fluent speakers don't necessarily have. I need to traverse the rocky road sometimes between the time when they first get to know me and the time when stuttering isn't an issue. Sometimes leading services, and especially for me delivering my sermons, can be particularly exhausting mentally and physically. I don't want to overstate that. Everybody has challenges that they face and that they have to deal with, but this is one of the ones that I myself have had to confront over the years.
As the listener know, or many listeners know, I'm Jewish, and I've heard many of our fellow Jews over the years comment that there seems to be a cultural part of Judaism where there's a lot of us who talk very fast. I mean, come from fast talking families, or at least it seems like that. Do you ever find it hard when you're with your fellow rabbi friends or just with a group of family or fellow Jews to get into the conversation because, you know, it's hard to find a way in sometimes because of stuttering?
Yes, we do talk a lot. We Jews are famous for our words, and we speak a lot of them. Fortunately, in terms of getting my words out and getting into conversations, my stutter is not severe enough that it prevents me from jumping in. And as a matter of fact, I speak probably fluent enough to keep plenty of people, to make it hard for plenty of other people to jump into conversations that I'm having. So I think that a lot of people who are parts of the conversations that I'm in might wish I stuttered a little bit more so that it was a little bit more difficult for me to jump in.
That's honey. This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes us with Rabbi Mark Glickman, who is kind enough to be joining us during a rabbinical conference in Palm Springs. So you said, and this is really great, in the article I mentioned earlier, you said that one of the reasons you became a rabbi was, quote, it was really a way of facing down my own demons, and you meant your stuttering demons. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, when I was younger, I did stutter more severely than I do now, and then, and to a great extent today, even it has always been difficult for me to get it out in words. We who stutter, we know what we want to say, and we know how we want to say them, and of course, rarely does it come out. Do the words come out just the way we want to say them? And so what did I do? Masochist that I am, I put myself into a position in which almost every day I'm called upon to get it out in words. And it really has put me on a daily basis in a position where I am called upon to become a master of the words that I'm trying to use. Words are amazing things, these little packets of breath that we sculpt as they leave our bodies, and they end up being this amazing tool to connect us to other people. And when I can control those, I can do amazing, to the extent that I can control those words and become a master of those words, I can do amazing things just like all of us can. And so it's always been so hard for me. And as a result, I put myself in this position in my life where I try to use those words as effectively as I can. And maybe one day I'll get it right.
Is it too much to say that it sounds like your stuttering almost makes you appreciate and value your words more?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, at the beginning of this interview, you mentioned the fact that I wrote a book. I'm writing a second book. I've written a column for the Seattle Times, and I do a lot of writing as well. And I think that my stuttering also has something to do with that as well. I don't stutter when I write. Not very much. And so when I write and when I edit, I can, you know, the words come out the way I want them to be, or at least they can get a lot closer to the way I want them to be. And I think the writing also has something to do with it as well.
And I haven't read your first book, but the reviews of it on Amazon are really, they really applaud your book. So you must be onto something.
Well, I try. Sure. I try. Those reviews might have been charitable, but thank you. Yeah.
So this is the fifth episode on a series that we're doing on faith and stuttering, religion and stuttering. So let me ask you a question that I've been asking everybody. Well, I just asked one guest, is there a Christian way to view stuttering? So let me ask you, is there a Jewish way to view stuttering and other impairments or disabilities?
Well, I think so. I mean, there is, you know, whenever you say, is there a Jewish way to view something, you could say what it is, and then you can come up with a contrary example. But I know that, you know, there's this story about Moses when he was a baby. He was brought into Pharaoh's palace, right? And the Pharaoh was very concerned about this baby who sort of mysteriously appeared in his palace one day, and his advisor said that there was a chance that this baby might grow up to try to dethrone him. And so the advisor suggested that they conduct an experiment where they put the baby down on the floor, and in front of the baby they put Pharaoh's crown and a burning ember, And if the baby went for the crown, that would be a signal that he was going to try to dethrone the pharaoh one day, and they'd have the baby killed immediately. And if he went for the ember, that would mean that he was kosher, or however you would say in Egyptian.
Yeah.
And so they put the baby down, they conducted the experiment, they put the baby down, and like any self-respecting baby, he went immediately for the glowing, glittering, jeweled crown. And at that moment, God sent an angel down to the baby Moses, scooped him up, and just as the baby was reaching out for the crown, the angel came down, scooped him up, and repositioned his body so that instead of reaching for the crown, he reached for the burning coal instead, and the coal burnt his fingers, and he immediately brought his fingers to his mouth, and that's how he ended up with the speech impediment, and the Jewish tradition says he stuttered. Now, I assume that the speech and language pathologist wouldn't that story wouldn't hold much water for speech and language pathologists. That's not the cause of stuttering. And yet, in the Jewish view, the notion is that God was somehow wrapped up in the creation of Moses's speech problems. That God somehow had something to do with it. That God wanted this great leader of his people, Moses, to be a person who struggled with words. It was done on purpose. I often say, God doesn't make many mistakes. He's made a few, but most were in the 1970s. And aside from that, God doesn't make too many mistakes. And so there must be a reason that we struggle the way we do. This aspect of who we as stutterers are must have been, they must somehow have been designed to play a role in the unfolding drama of the universe. We don't understand what it is, but at least for starters, that's where I begin. That even if we might not understand it, and we might not be able to fathom why it is that God would make us like this, there must somehow be a reason for it. And one of our challenges is to figure out what that reason is.
One of our regular listeners, Frank Stetchel, who's been on the show, and he's also Jewish, he posted a great question on the Stutter Talk Facebook page that I'm just asking all of our guests who are speaking on this topic. How do you understand God's love in light of your stuttering?
Well, my first answer is that I often don't. There are days when I come back, and I don't say this at the time, but I will confess there are days at the end of the day when I've been struggling a lot, and I come back home and I say, why in the world, did God make me like this? Why do I have to deal with this? Which is my way of saying some things that are far less broadcastable toward God. It makes me angry sometimes. But I can't answer for everybody. I would say that for me, I do think that my stuttering has, it has added to my sensitivity, and hopefully it's allowed me to be a better rabbi because of it. I think it's also allowed me to role model for people young and old in my congregations and the people I come into contact with that while there are plenty of things that can handicap our bodies, the only things that can handicap our spirit are the things that we allow to handicap our spirit. I remember you mentioned earlier the conventions of the National Stuttering Association. I had the privilege of delivering a keynote at one of those conventions.
I didn't know that. Oh, wow.
Yeah, several years ago, and probably about 10 years ago, maybe more. And I remember the people I met there, some of them stuttered so severely, and yet they stayed at it. They stayed at it. They didn't let the words drift away. They wanted to say something, and they said it. That's a nobility and a strength that I see that it was an inspiration for me. And also, I think, I'm reluctant to say some of these things because I don't want to sound too self-aggrandizing, but I will say that every once in a while, I think I've had an experience in which my words have hit home. My words have had an impact. They've kind of stuck. They've worked. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it is an amazing feeling. And I think that it is my stuttering and the love I have for words, particularly, and the love I have for making words work that have impelled me towards a position where I am more ready, more able to do that. And hopefully they'll have some lasting impact. So I don't know why God does what he does. I don't know why God made me this way. But I have to, I think of God's love, I guess, as love of the world. And if my passion for words can help make the world a better place, and my passion for words comes partly through stuttering, then maybe my stuttering is an important part of the picture.
Have you had any congregants who stutter?
Yes, not severely, but I have had some who stuttered, and others, and I've had many who struggle with various different speech impediments. I'm trying to think of some who stuttered. I can't think of any specifically offhand, but I know there must have been some along the way.
I ask because years ago we had a doctor on the show who stutters, and he told how – and he stuttered very noticeably. And he shared how his stuttering had brought him closer to he shared about one patient and how it really meant a lot to the child to see a successful doctor struggling with his own impairment or issue. So I'm just wondering if your congregants, you know, if it's helpful at times that your words get stuck.
Yes, I think so. And I think that, you know, I've had parents come up to me and say that my kid is struggling with this speech impairment or this, you know, maybe he has Asperger's and maybe the kid has some sort of some other challenge. And they said that it meant a lot to them to see me standing up there and speaking to the congregation, even though it was difficult and even in the face of that difficulty. Just recently, I have a colleague whose son stutters. And my colleague told his son about me, and the son just had a bar mitzvah, and it was the son mentioned that the fact that I am a stutterer and in the rabbinate was an inspiration for him, and it was an honor to me to know that I had been able to serve as that kind of an inspiration. It was a real thrill.
Well, one of the reasons that I invited you on Stutter Talk is I think it's important for young people who want to go to rabbinical school to know that others have done it and they can do it too.
Right. And as a matter of fact, you know, there's one other rabbi who is said to have stuttered, a prominent one. In fact, he was the first rabbi, at least in the rabbinic view of the world, and that was Moses. The rabbis historically have called Moses Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses our teacher and Moses our rabbi. And as we said earlier, Jewish tradition says that he stuttered. And so I figured, you know, if Moses can do it, then maybe I could too. So he was one of the inspirations for me.
Yeah, well, yeah, I had a guest on a week or two ago, or a few weeks ago now, Phil Schneider, and he spoke at length on Moses. And I asked Phil if he thought Moses stuttered, and he basically said, well, all the arrows are pointing in that direction. And I know that as a stutterer, the more I learn about Moses, the more I want him to be, you know, on our team.
Of course. Well, look, you know, it was interesting. In fact, just this morning, this came up in one of our discussions at this conference. What Moses says at the burning bush in Hebrews, Lo ish devarim anochi, I'm not a man of words. And later commentators said that meant that he stuttered. It could have meant that he wasn't very articulate. It could have meant that he didn't speak Egyptian very well. It could have meant any of a host of things. But, you know, in a sense, what is stuttering? It is knowing what you want to say and having trouble spitting it out. And in that sense, we're all stutterers in some sense. We all struggle with words. But when Moses first said, I'm not a man of words, it was at the burning bush when he was trying to get out of the job that God was giving him. God told him that it was time to do this big job, to go back into Egypt, to lead the Israelites out. And he said, I'm not a man of words. Let's assume it meant that he stuttered. It was right after that that God gets angry for the first time ever. When Moses tried to weasel out of what he had to do by not talking, by not using his words because he stuttered, God gets angry for the first time ever. God had already had to deal with Cain and Abel and the golden calf and the generation of Noah becoming corrupt. God didn't ever get angry then. It was only when Moses tried to use his stutter as an excuse not to talk that God gets angry. And, you know, God says, well, I'll make Aaron your spokesperson. You know, I always pictured that before I looked into this carefully. I always pictured the scene that, you know, when that Moses and Aaron would go to Pharaoh, and that that Moses would lean over and would whisper something into Aaron's ear. And then Aaron would say, he said, let my people go, or whatever it was. But if you read the text closely, that's not what happens. What really happens is that God said to Moses, you speak. I need you to speak. Say what you have to say. And Aaron will talk to Pharaoh. In other words, you know, Moses, you've got something to say. Don't you dare keep it inside, even if it doesn't come out all pretty. Let Aaron make it sound pretty. You're going to speak. And I counted, because after that, God tells Moses to speak at least 70 times. Speak, 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 speak. And it's when Moses doesn't speak that he gets into trouble throughout his life. Early in his life, he saw an Egyptian taskmaster beating an Israelite slave, and he didn't say, stop that. Instead, he just made sure no one was watching, and he smote the guy. And then later in his life, when God said, speak to this rock and let water come for it to give to the Israelites, Moses instead hit it with a staff. He didn't speak to it, and God gets so angry, he refuses to let him go into the promised land. God keeps on saying to Moses, you know, use your words, speak, 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 speak. And wouldn't you know, Moses' final gift to the Jewish people was a big, long speech, or a couple of them. It was contained in the book of Deuteronomy. And the book of Deuteronomy in Hebrew is called Sefer Devarim, the book of words. So Moses starts this journey by saying, I'm not a man of words. And his greatest lasting legacy is the book of words. It was so hard for him. But indeed, for this stuttering guy, it was his words that ended up being his greatest and most lasting gift.
I really like that version of the story or of history. That's a very stutter-strong version, right?
I would like to think so. And I would think an accurate and completely insightful and truthful perspective, of course.
This is Stutter Talk. I'm Peter Reitzes, here with Rabbi Mark Glickman. Rabbi Glickman has served as rabbi of two congregations in Washington State, or is serving as rabbi of two congregations in Washington State, Congregation Kol Shalom and Congregation Kol Ami. They're lucky to have you. Do you have time for a few more questions?
Sure.
So, I need to ask you about speech tools. Because listeners always want to know, when people are speaking in front of crowds or in front of congregations, are you using any speaking strategies, whether they're self-developed or learned in speech therapy, to help you get through counseling or a sermon?
Yeah, that's a perfectly valid question. And I don't know if I use any tools. One of the ways that my own personal pride comes out is that I will not avoid words. We all know this, that, or at least I assume stutterers have this experience where as you see a word coming down the pike, you know you're going to have trouble with it. You can anticipate it. You know it's going to block you up. And I always stay with that word and try to get it out, and hopefully it'll come out as smooth as possible, to the extent that sometimes I will write a sermon and I know that the first word is going to block me up. And so for days I'll struggle, you know, do I want to use it? Do I not? And it is exhausting. The lead up is exhausting, but I do it anyway. That's not so much a tool. I also try to focus on slowing down to be in the moment. You know, I was thinking about this. Stuttering is not, You don't stutter in an instant. You stutter over the course of time. If you could take 1 second of a recording of any of us talking, then it wouldn't come across as stuttering. It's only over the, you know, as time unfolds that it becomes a stutter. So I try to focus on being present and being in the moment And sometimes that helps. Not always, but sometimes.
Now, this is pretty much the same question, but let me ask you anyway. We're going to do a series at Stutter Talk, hopefully in February, because we always get these messages from listeners, and they're really short. They'll say, I stutter, or if they're from India or Britain, they'll say, I stammer. What should I do? And, it's tough because you have to write back and say, well, we can't give you advice because we don't know you. We don't know your situation, but in general, this is what I've done. So I'm not going to ask you to tell somebody else what they should do. But if you could give us some more bullet points. So what did you do to face your stuttering? Maybe you've got three bullet points. So you don't avoid.
Yeah. And I guess the opposite would be what I was talking about in terms of Moses. Speak. I am fully of the belief that every individual on this glorious earth of ours has something to say, something unique to say, something that needs to be said. If that was not the case, God wouldn't have put you here and you wouldn't have had this amazing ability to use language to express your thoughts. So just as God said to Moses, you speak, 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 speak. You got something in there that's worth saying. Say it. I guess if you're asking me for what tools I've used, it is that I speak. And yes, it might not sound pretty, and it might not sound beautiful, and it might not sound perfectly polished like the smooth talkers out there. But you have something to say. It's in there. It is of crucial importance that the world hear it. To keep it inside would be to keep it inside would be to betray the reasons and the gift of your presence on the earth. Speak.
Let me ask you one last question, Rabbi Mark Glickman. Is there anything about stuttering, Judaism, religion, and faith that I haven't asked you about that you'd just like to take a moment on?
I wrote this book about the Cairo Geniza. This was an attic in Egypt where in the late 1800s they discovered this pile of 300,000 ancient and medieval documents, lost books of the Bible, biblical passages, prayer books, love letters, business records, medical prescriptions. And it's because in Judaism you don't traditionally throw away sacred words. And I guess I would say that words and the gift of speech, as I see it, is a God-given gift. And we as stutterers sometimes respond to our challenges by withdrawing. And I think we should celebrate this wonderful gift of ours. And to share it with the world, even though, as I said, it's not perfect. Parts of our gift is that it forces the people around us to slow down. That's one of the unique gifts that we bring to speech in this ever accelerating world, is the gift of slowness. And we perhaps, I think that's part of what we can bring to the discussion, and the world needs it from us. It's not going to kill them to slow down a little bit, so we need to speak. If I could just also share one more story.
Yeah.
When I remember when I was, I guess I was in my 20s, I went into a fast food place, and it was everything was going very fast, very fast. And there was a long line, and it was one of these places where they only took one order at a time. And I wanted some butter. And so I went up to the counter and I said, could I have some? And I just stopped up and nothing. And the teenager on the other side of the counter was staring at me with a cute, perky look on her face, but she was rapidly running out of patience. The whole line, people behind me, I could feel their glare that I was slowing them down. I just wanted to say butter. I just wanted some butter. And I was struggling with it. And I just felt so horrible that I was slowing everybody down. And, I realized that I shouldn't have felt so bad. And, it wasn't going to kill anybody. And darn it, I wanted some butter. So finally I did get it out. And she said, you want some butter? I said, yes. She said, oh, I'm sorry, sir, all we have is margarine.
But that's great.
But it was still good that I said it, I think.
Yeah, and let me know if I'm on the right track here, but when you started telling that story and you said butter for the first time, you quickly said the word again. And I've done that before, so I'm remembering a word that I've had a tough time saying. Perhaps there was embarrassment or shame. And when I mention it again, I say it twice. And in my eyes, it's probably because I'm reclaiming it. Like, yes, I can do this. Was that what you just did, or was that something?
Yes. Yes, I'm not going to let that word get the best of me. Butter, butter, butter. I'm going to say it over and over
because
I am going to be a master of my word. You know, Moses said, I'm not a man of words. I sometimes feel that way, but darn it, I am going to become a man of words. Butter. There, I said it.
Wow. See, now I'm in a tough spot because I was going to call this show something like Judaism and Stuttering, but now I'm tempted to just call it A Master of My Words. There's so many good titles here.
Or A Man of Words, yes. However you want to title it.
Well, I have to tell you, this was the most fun I've had on Stutter Talk in some time.
Thank you.
And I just want to thank you, Rabbi Mark Glickman, who is author of Sacred Treasure, the Cairo Geniza, the amazing discoveries of forgotten Jewish history in an Egyptian synagogue attic. This was really fun. Maybe we could get you back on Stutter Talk sometime.
I would love to. And you're doing important work. And I hope that I wish you all every success in your work. And I hope that the through your important, and I would even say sacred work, that stutterers everywhere can learn to find their voices.
Wow, sacred work. That's really touching. Thank you so much.
Thank you.